You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club.
Hello and welcome to Nick Luck Daily, the show that brings you the latest news and the sharpest insight from around the racing world. I'm Tom Stanley, in for Nick Luck this week again, as he's on his way back from the Breeders' Cup, and that event is what today's show will centre around, this Monday, the 9th of November. Authentic provided Bob Baffert with a fourth Breeders' Cup Classic in 7 years and provided John Velasquez with his very first. We'll hear from John a little later in the show. And we also saw a Saturday clean sweep on the turf for the Europeans. Rishi Prasad is my guest today. And Rishi, was it a classic Breeders' Cup this year?
Yes, for me it was, Tom. I really enjoyed every moment of it. Last week, I remember talking to Nick about it and saying that in the lead up to Breeders' Cup week, I perhaps wasn't entirely convinced just how strong it was. But as the week wore on and I got more into it, looking at some of the big contenders, especially the European contenders, because obviously being based here, that's the interest that I have in particular. And seeing some of the good horses that we sent out there and some of the unusual connections going out there, it made for more interest than I'd at first anticipated. Plus the fact that, you know, all the top American horses were lining up on the dirt races in particular. So it was a classic weekend of racing at the Breeders' Cup. Some amazing stories, and most importantly, a lot of European success, which certainly makes it an enjoyable one watching it over the 2 days.
And I suppose as far as the Breeders' Cup Classic went, this was a year where we didn't have an absolute standout performer, a horse that had won everything before and was, you know, a very short price towards the top of the betting as such. There were a few that had been beating each other, but what it meant was there was great strength in depth in that field.
Yeah, I think you could have made a strong case for a lot of the runners in the 10-strong field. What always has to be taken into account when looking at especially the classic this year is the fact that things didn't work out because of COVID, etc., and the rejigging of the calendar. Things perhaps didn't quite work out the way a lot of people would have expected it to in a normal year, and you had obviously the Derby being run in the autumn, and a horse like Authentic really coming into his own late on in the season. And a horse like Tis the Law, who was obviously seemingly taking advantage of being perhaps more forward than a few others and a bit more developed. But this happens in a normal year anyway. But obviously, horses like Authentic coming to the fore in a major race like the Derby later on in the season and then continuing to progress into the autumn, I guess the fact that he has done what he's done this season makes him obviously a contender for Horse of the Year. But I like the fact that there was, in this year, no obvious champion. And I accepted that because of the season that we'd had and the fact that things were just a little bit unusual. And I'm quite happy to accept that in this year. I mean, it's great always when you get one champion. It's great when you get like a cigar against Halling, although that never came to fruition because of poor old Halling hating the dirt. But then when you get a Saki and a Tisnow and a Giant's Causeway and a Tisnow, that's fantastic. And I don't mind when it's a little bit different and you end up with a whole field full of probable chances.
Well, it was Authentic who took the Classic and in doing so gave 48-year-old Johnny Velasquez his very first win in the race. I started by asking him how that felt.
Oh, it feels incredible. You know, I'm been very blessed and very lucky that and so many winners and so many Breeders' Cup and not having winning the Classic, it feels definitely like a big relief. I'm very happy, definitely.
Was delighted. Was it playing on your mind in any way? I think we always think with sportsmen when they haven't done something in a particular race as big as the Classic, for example. Was it playing on your mind at all?
Absolutely. I always thought about it. I was thinking that, you know, when it's going to be my time, obviously, and I would have loved to win it before I retired. And this is what kept me here, you know, keep me on the game and thinking, you know, that one day I'd get the opportunity to win it. And definitely very thankful that I got it to win it yesterday.
You say that's one thing that keeps you going. I take it you're still just as hungry to come back next year and win it again, right, with another horse,
absolutely,
maybe the same one.
Absolutely. You know, that's what keeps me going. That's, you know, keep you hungry and to ride this kind of races, you know, and the opportunity to ride in horses like Authentic. It's incredible. You know,
you and the horse, Johnny, you got a great partnership together. Last time, did that dent your confidence at all when he was just beaten in the Preakness going into the Classic?
I didn't lose any confidence in him. I think he definitely is a very, very good horse in a different tracks and different things that happened in the shadows on the track. It really had him very timid. Like, I mean, he still ran a very fast race. Don't get me wrong. We cannot take away what the filly did as well. But he didn't really run his best race that day, you know. So I knew changing track and hopefully, you know, not having the shadow that was where every pole on the racetrack they were at the Preakness, you know, hopefully he'll put his mind into the business. And that's what happened yesterday, you know. I mean, track and he was ready. He was really, his mind was all in the game, and he showed what kind of good horse he is.
Yeah, I mean, Bob made no secret of the fact that he's a quirky horse. Did you feel that from the moment you got on him yesterday, were you confident that that was going to be his day? Was he showing you the right signs?
You know, I have to say yes. I mean, he was so different than what he ran last time in the Preakness yesterday. He was so calm. He was very focused, very different. You know, so I knew his mind was in the business, plus the surroundings too, you know. Like he didn't seem like a strange horse like he was on the Preakness, so it gave me a really good feeling, definitely.
And you must have been proud you teamed up with Bob as well, with Gamine right at the start of the Grade One races. Gosh, she was good. I know she didn't hit the lead, but she was very good, wasn't she?
I think she showed that she can do whatever it is throw at her. You know, that was a much different weight of her style of running that she's shown in the past, and I thought she could do it anyway. And obviously with that much speed in the race, the plan was just let's come out running, and if the other horse wants to go, he's going to have to run much faster than what we are doing. And it worked out perfect. We spread the field away, and then I was comfortable to, you know, to put her into the outside of the horse. And I waited to my time, and when I asked her down the stretch again, I mean, she was right on cue when I asked him to run, and she showed how good she is as well.
John, what was it like riding? You've ridden so many big race winners. What was it like riding two Breeders' Cup winners on Saturday, but to no crowd, no fans? How different was it?
Yeah, it's very sad, if you will. You know, I mean, we missed the crowd. We kind of fit from the crowd and the excitement from the fans, but I mean, it's 2020, and you see that the difficulties to have so many people in one place. So we've gotten used to it, at least for the last few months. You know that you know we're going from track to track, and not many people on the racetrack, and it feels very strange. But on the other hand, we are working. You know, we are giving our horse racing fans that they can watch it on TV, they can bet in on the computer, on the phone, and whatever it may be, and still keeping their horse racing alive and competitive out there. So it's important for us that we continue doing this for all our fans and owners and trainers and everybody who's involved on the racing industry.
And it still felt, watching on from home, that there was some sort of atmosphere there. It felt like Keeneland did a great job. I know there were, I think, up to 10 owners per horse, etc. But I think that added to the sense of occasion. Of course, it was quieter, but it still had an atmosphere about it.
Absolutely. You know, and with the people that were there, they made it very exciting. You know, for everybody, there wasn't a lot of people, like you said, but I mean, it was very exciting for the people who were there participating and giving some life to the races, though. You know, and it's great to see that as well, though, you know, that their owners and families get to enjoy the great feeling of being part of the races.
Johnny, I don't know if I've missed it. Authentic next. Do you know what he does? Where he goes? Does he go?
No, they haven't said anything. I was talking last night with Bob, and they were in the media room, and they asked the question, what he thinks going to do with him. He doesn't know. You know, the owners were thinking that maybe he'd retire, maybe not. So he's still waiting for the word if he's going to come back next year. So he doesn't have a vote on that, he said. So whatever they do, you know, it's going to be sad if he doesn't come back next year.
You want to win your second Dubai World Cup, no? Get him on a plane.
Right? That's what I said. Like, oh, come on, Vinny Luzzurro, he just started to be good. He just started to, you know, mature. He's really getting to know what he needs to do. But yeah, it depends on the owner, whatever the owners want to do. So we don't have a vote for that.
And if there's one man that can identify Johnny Velasquez's first Dubai World Cup winner, it's Rishi Prasad. It was, of course, Rishi.
Roses in May, garlands in March, said Terry Spargo. I still remember that commentary. I still remember the success of Roses in May, Ken Ramsey-owned runner, Del Roman's training. Fantastic performance, yeah. It's a long time, 15 years ago, young Thomas.
My Spargo commentary reference is Chrome turns to gold. Much more recent.
Great Australian accent as well, better than mine.
Thank you very much. Those years of active training. it was obvious to hear. It was great to hear in John's voice just what it meant to him. A highly decorated rider, but I suppose akin to the races over here, we have the Derby, the National over jumps. You know, this is for so many American riders the one that they want to win, and it was the monkey off his back, if you like, just on the eve really of his 49th birthday.
Yeah. He's a rider, obviously, who's achieved so much in the sport. You know, he's had thousands and thousands of winners. He's an Eclipse Award winner. He's ridden so many great horses. It's always, I guess, for someone operating at that level, it's a thorn in the side when they don't bag a race like the Breeders' Cup Classic. As you pointed out, it would be like, you know, if Frankie Dettori was still waiting to win the Derby or the Arc, for example, after such an illustrious career. So you could hear the relief in his voice to get that Breeders' Cup Classic on his CV. And it would be great. It would be great to see horse and rider and connections head out to Dubai once again. It'd be great to see him in training as a four-year-old.
Absolutely. Would echo that. We'll see whether that comes to pass. Bob Baffert also had Gamine, we referenced, had Authentic, had the 1-2 in the classic with improbable finishing second. Look, Bob had come out and issued, it was aired on NBC, a pretty strong defence of the claims made against him. Did it leave a sour taste in any way? What's happened with Bob and any banned substance concerns again this year that he won another classic?
Well, it's been mentioned before, Tom, the fact that, you know, the fact that someone has had these allegations and these issues hanging over them, like Bob Baffert has done, especially this year, it seems to have intensified the use of substances with his horses. And like in the sport of athletics or in cycling, where after a period of time, people suddenly become synonymous is a strong word, but they become synonymous with the fact that, you know, they have this issue hanging over them. It leaves a question mark when something good happens. For example, if an athlete clocks an amazing time nowadays, even if they probably are running drug free, there's always in the back of their mind, well, this is a sport tainted by this. So how do we know for sure that it's clean? And that's what I'm worried about when it comes to something like, you know, Authentic winning the Breeders' Cup Classic. The horse, obviously, you know, I feel very happy that the horse is clearly a trier and works hard and does his job and is very talented. But then people will say, there are people who might say, well, you know, his trainer has this stigma now of being involved with substance for his horses, illegal substances for his horses. So is there a question mark hanging over these horses when they're successful? And that's the uncertainty you want to remove. You want to remove uncertainty. You want to see these horses win a race and hail them as champions without any thoughts at the back of your mind. And it's hard to do when it's obviously been a big issue this year, an issue enough for Bob Baffert to come out in the week of the Breeders' Cup and make a statement. But bearing in mind now that, you know, it's, you know, the use of drugs in America, obviously, with their horses is more liberal than it is here. In fact, the four European winners all use Lasix on the day. Some European runners chose not to use Lasix, or the connections chose not to use Lasix. But the fact is that the four winners did use it. So in America, it's perhaps that question mark about how they use it compared to how we use it here in Europe. But with regards to Bob Baffert in particular, the fact that this has been a year that's been awkward for him in many respects, and that he's got this hanging over him, it just leaves that little burning question in the back of your mind that, was that a clean victory? And that's what I'd like to be removed.
I want to ask what you made of the ride on Improbable, in particular late on by Arad Ortiz, and the use and perceived overuse of the whip.
Again, another uncomfortable situation, particularly for anybody who, or uncomfortable for anybody who likes racing anyway, but for anybody who perhaps only dips in and out, it's even worse when you watch the performance of Arad Ortiz on Improbable. The use of the whip in the closing stages was far beyond what seemed necessary. It's not the first time that we've seen this sort of action, and it's not just American jockeys. Christophe Soumillon, Thunder Snow, etc. These things have happened before. American authorities perhaps ought to really do some proper investigation and reporting on that welfare issue with regards to the use of the whip, especially in these big races. Yes, there's a lot on the line. It's a huge race, but there ought to be enough of a deterrent, at least, to prevent riders using their whip with such frequency on a horse. It looks awful. And ultimately, the sport is a perception. I know we've had this debate and discussion before. Perception is extremely important nowadays, the way people are so easy to judge, and people are quick to express their opinion based on limited evidence. And that limited evidence, unfortunately, displayed by Arad Ortiz, was not pretty viewing whatsoever.
You mentioned the four European runners, winners on the turf, the clean sweep on the turf on Saturday, that was. Well, Adrian Beaumont is director of the International Racing Bureau and the European representative at the Breeders' Cup. I spoke to him earlier and started by asking him to reflect on that European success this year.
Yeah, it was wonderful, Tom, to have so many runners out here and to have such fantastic success yesterday. It was particularly gratifying to see some of the newbie trainers running so well. And of course, James Fanshawe having his first ever runner at the Breeders' Cup and winning with Olderia. It was a wonderful success. I watched the race with James and his wife, Jacko, and they were over the moon with everything that went on. They couldn't believe they were going to win. It was particularly wonderful seeing James wearing his trilby. He looked like the proper English gent.
He did. And there's some great shots of them celebrating in typical James fashion, and dare I say in typical Jacko fashion as well. She got particularly excited. That was lovely to see.
I think it came as a complete shock to them. I think they thought the filly was going to run well. She'd look well all week, in fairness. It was interesting that we're allowed to work on the turf every day here at Keeneland, and I think James took full advantage of that, and I think it was great being able to get some experience of the course beforehand.
How important is it, as far as you're concerned, to go out to these meetings and have success in order to encourage not just the big trainers, because I think there are certain trainers we expect to turn up, but those trying it for the first time to have success, it encourages them to come back, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a good mixture of everything here. We've had the glorious weather here, which has made life so so enjoyable while we've been in Lexington compared to 2015. We've had very good vibes in the training. Everything's gone really well. It's great at Keeneland here. We have a training track on a synthetic as well as the main track and the turf track. So that's gone really well. And as you say, it's really important that we have success. It encourages people to come back. Even if they themselves got beaten, they can see it's possible to do it. And it's great that the likes of Nigel Tinkler, obviously Kevin Ryan brilliantly let yesterday with only his second runner, and James Fanshawe, all these guys winning good races, winning lots of money, having a great time. The owners, we're so lucky here, Tom, in that we weren't allowed to have any crowd here at Keeneland yesterday, but we had, you're allowed up to 10 connections per horse, and obviously the trainers and so forth. So it was quite busy, even though it was behind closed doors, and I think everyone had a wonderful time.
How different an experience was it going racing there compared to even the bigger meetings over here this year?
Yeah, well, I've experienced various degrees of participation in England, from like Royal Ascot when no one was there, right through to some of the meetings more recently when we've had owners. But I think they went out of their way to say that we could have up to 10 per owners per runner at this meeting. So all the people that needed to be there were there. And whilst there was no fans, and it definitely didn't have the crowded feel that we have in England, it was very enjoyable. They only restricted it to trainers, grooms and two owners per horse in the saddling paddock. But the saddling paddock here is absolutely vast. And they also split each the horses to walk on their own trees in the paddock. So that in itself is social distancing. So we all felt very safe. It was full masks on for everybody. And I think everyone had a really good time. I think the only disappointing person was possibly Christophe Soumillon. He tested positive while he was out here, you see. So that was very unfortunate for him.
How difficult has your role this year been organising and facilitating travel to these big events, given the COVID situation?
Well, I mean, I can give you a few facts on that, Tom, in that we had 21 different trainers and we had 36 different horses here. So it's remarkable that we kept the numbers really up high, and it was fantastic in that regard. So
how does that compare to previous years that you've been out?
I don't think we've ever had as many different trainers as in previous years. And I think obviously the horses, I think we may have peaked about 40. We didn't have any undercard runners this year. So all the horses that came here were to run in the big races themselves.
I suppose when we looked at the start of the flat season, you and your position as director of the International Racing Bureau must have thought, crikey, this could be bad for the obvious reasons. Do you look back now that most of those big meetings are behind you, albeit you've got some big ones to come, and think it's gone pretty well?
Well, we've lost some big meetings. Obviously, I've had no runners in New York or Del Mar or Woodbine or Arlington this year. Arlington Million was even cancelled. So a lot of my clients lost their races because they couldn't afford to put the stakes on without the attendances. And in particular, in countries like America and in Canada, the fact that we weren't allowed to bring Europeans over. I mean, one thing that your followers might be interested in knowing about is the fact that no European people can travel here to America. The only reason we were allowed in was that we've got a special permission, a special government exemption. Homeland Security gave us elite sportsmen's exemptions to be here. And you had to be connected to the horse. You had to be an owner, a trainer, or a groom to be even allowed into the country. And we were very, very lucky. I think the only journalist out here was Nick Luck, because he was actually working as staff for the event. He was the host of the draw function, and was obviously on NBC yesterday. And I think Nick was the only media guy out here, and obviously ourselves, IRB, as organisers of the event.
Well, thank goodness you did get out there, and great that we can toast success as well, particularly on that Saturday afternoon. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, it was great. And as I say, I mean, the betting handle is amazing. They did $160 million, sixth highest ever, and more than Churchill in 2 years ago. So it's been a huge success, and the British trainers have had a fantastic time. And we roll on now to Bahrain and other places through the rest of the year.
Well, it was a welcome trip for Adrian, Rish, and for all those European contingent. And the key thing I think Adrian was touching upon there was it wasn't just the big boys. And Aidan O'Brien's 1-2-3 was unbelievable in the mile, of course it was. But it was some of those smaller yards or less experienced yards with regard to the Breeders' Cup that tasted success as well, which is so important for continuing support going forward.
It really is. I mean, obviously, the Breeders' Cup historically has been extremely well supported by European runners, but European success will encourage more people to travel. It was great to see You Better Believe It, the likes of Miss Amulet getting placed on the Friday on the turf. But then, of course, what happened on Saturday was simply superb. Glass Slippers, an outstanding ride from Tom Eaves. It really was, when he saw the gap and he saw, you could almost hear in his mind, death or glory, and he went for glory and he got it. Orderiah, for me, just about my favourite moment, watching the Fanshawes celebrating that success. Seemingly, you know, unexpected, you would think, the way they responded to the race. But, you know, I think James Fanshawe is generally a pretty nervous and pessimistic chap, despite his amazing success. You know, he's had, what a trainer he has been through his career so far. You know, obviously former assistant to Sir Michael Stout, and he's done brilliantly. You know, champion hurdle winners, Breeders' Cup winners, just fantastic. And a poignant success as well, obviously owned by Alison Swinburne, former partner of Walter Swinburne. A 1-2-3 for Aidan O'Brien. incredible number of 1-2-3s he's had in Group 1 races around the world. And I think the Racing Post today highlighted the fact that he's had a 1-2-3 in the Irish Derby 7 times. I mean, it is amazing. And then again, another poignant success with Tanawa in the turf. Dermot Weld, the winning trainer, taking time to remember the late Pat Smullen.
Yeah, that interview again on Luck on Sunday was an excellent interview, and I think it was the first thing a lot of people thought of, and Dermot was clearly keen to point that out, and I think that would have made that win in some ways bittersweet, but in some ways all that more special. PCB was in fine form, wasn't he? Pierre-Charles Boudot, Colin Keane riding out there, Tom Eaves' first ride out there. I often focus coming into the meeting from a betting perspective on riders with a lack of experience of these American tracks, albeit on the turf. But I think, you know, it's an extra step for them. It makes it all that harder. But I think plenty of the newbies or the less experienced riders out there covered themselves in glory.
Yeah, I think Jerry Bailey made the point on the excellent NBC coverage with our good friend Nick Luck on the weekend. Jerry Bailey made the point that if you're riding at the Breeders' Cup, the likelihood is that you are one of the top jockeys and you've got there because you've got the skills and the talent. And the only thing that can potentially go wrong may be, you know, either a rush of blood or the big stage. But generally, these guys are prepared for the big stage because they've been doing it in their home countries. And Colin Keane, you know, duck to water. Tom Eaves, duck to water, handle it beautifully. Pierre-Charles Boudot, one of the best riders in the world, full stop. And yeah, with that in mind, you have to feel a little bit sorry for poor old Christophe Soumillon. What a day he would have had had he not failed his COVID test. He would have had 3 winners.
Are we just adding some European bias to this podcast and say, well, it was great that there were 4 winners, or is that what these international meetings are all about? Wherever they are hosted, you want the challengers to come and make their presence felt, win races.
I don't think we can be anything but a little bit biased. If this meeting took place and it was all American and, you know, obviously very good racing, we can enjoy it as lovers of the sport, but it gives it much more enjoyment as far as I'm concerned. And I hope that I'm not alone in this, seeing European horses make the journey over, have success as well. And unlikely success, you know, when you think about the background for Alda Ryan, where she started off her racing career and how she progressed very, very quickly this season into becoming a Group 1 filly, for example, and how Tanawa has picked up this season. We see them, you know, doing what they're doing under our noses, so to speak, and the idea of watching them take the challenge abroad against the best of other countries, just like any sport, when the best take on the best and people who come from different backgrounds and different settings, different environments, clash in one particular environment. It makes for a fascinating spectacle.
Well, Tom Eaves was riding in his first Breeders' Cup, and I spoke to him a little bit earlier. Started by asking him if he thought Glass Slippers had a serious chance of landing the turf sprint.
Yeah, well, we arrived over here Monday, and we had her out on the track, and so obviously everything has to sort of fall right and everything, and we took her around the grass each day and that, and every day she just sort of kept filling us with confidence and that, and yeah, it was a Thursday. We breezed a letter because obviously she's won round Chester before, but sort of different sort of round a bend like that, and we just let her swing on a bit round it and breezed her up the straight, and she sort of switched the leads, and she gave us a right good feel, like, and we come off the track, and first thing Kevin said is we're in business, you know, we've got a chance at, regarding everything sort of slots right, we've got a chance, and yeah, sort of went from there, and then obviously the draw come out, we're in 6, we're happy with that, and
I mean the obviously the European record on the grass is pretty good, but the turf sprint is a slightly different ball game. What were you aware of that going out there? Did you feel that some of those really sharp Americans might just be too quick for your filly?
Yeah, I wasn't too worried about that really. We were quite happy with the fact that there would be loads of pace on. We're happy. It was 5.5. We thought we knew she'd stay well in that. So yeah, we're
we're happy with that. Happy to sort of sit in and get a tour around.
And you did just that, and then you went the brave route right up the inside as well. Was there ever a plan of yours to switch to the outside, or did it just the cards fell that it meant you got to run up the inner?
No, well, to be fair, we've obviously watched plenty of replays around the inner, and I know Glass Slippers very well, but I've not ridden at a Breeders' Cup before, so I spoke to Ryan for a bit of advice, and I just basically said, what would you do if you were riding her? And he said just ride with confidence and go the shortest way around and ride her for luck. And I said that to Kevin, and to be fair, it was great. He just said, you just do what you want, just do that perfect. So sort of when you can go out and ride with the confidence that you know Kevin and the owners are behind you, and you know what I mean, you can sort of ride like that. And luckily enough, the splits come and we got a lovely run round.
You're a modest bloke, Tom, and that came across, I think, in your immediate post race interview on horseback, when you were just keen to thank Glass Slippers, thank the trainer, thank the owners as well for making sure you got the ride and kept the ride out, riding out of the Breeders' Cup. You were very thankful, but do you look back and you allow yourself to go, I gave that a pretty good ride?
Yeah, to be fair, yeah, it all slotted right, and I sort of went into the race just not really hyping it up or anything in my own head, just trying to keep it simple. Went through the form, see where everything was, and just tried to keep it simple, really. But yeah, after the race, when you look back, you just think, yeah, that all slotted right, and thankfully it did on the big day, you know.
The first thing I thought of when I watched it and saw you smiling away, genuinely, the first thing I thought of was that Nunthorpe and Mabs Cross a few years ago when you were. Yeah, it's fair to say you were on the floor really afterwards, weren't you? And it was such a bitter pill to swallow. And we know how difficult this game can be and how cruel it can be and tightest of margins, etc. And you just got to wait for those other good days to come along. And it won't have been lost on plenty of people that how much this will have meant to you.
This is like amazing. Yeah, just meant so much. And you know, like I said, especially with everyone involved and everything, and to come over here and do it was a day I never forget. Just thankful it all went right, you know.
Best moment of the career?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've been lucky now, like five Group One, so every one of them or any big race means a lot. But yeah, I think definitely coming over here and doing that is. Definitely a highlight of my career, yeah.
Rishi Prasad. Mm. Money Monday Rish, that's what they call you.
Yeah.
All you need to do is send the listeners home with a winner.
Big Money Rish. The last race at Kempton. I'm thankfully at Kempton today, so for Racing TV. And I've gone through the form with a fine-tooth comb. And in the last race at Kempton, there's a horse called Perfect Grace running. She's had two runs over hurdles so far. She won at Southall. The horse that she beat there, Modelo D'Oro, is now rated in the 120s. She got beaten on her second start in a mare's novices hurdle, but has had a wind op since then. And she's rated 109 for a conditional jockey's handicap hurdle today. So with that in mind and hoping that the wind op has worked, I thought she might be well handicapped in the last race at Kempton today.
Perfect Grace for Big Money Rish. Rishi, thank you very much.
Cheers, Tom.
Thank you to John Velasquez, to Adrian Beaumont, to Tom Eaves. Thank you for listening this week. And if you liked it, don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.